Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, curator Michael Rooks from Atlanta's famed High Museum of Art is here to talk about their newest exhibition, saluting the life and career of abstract artist Julie Maritou. Smooth jazz flautist and vocalist Reagan Whiteside is here to talk about her new album and hosting WCLK's new program, Saturday with Reagan Whiteside. And finally, veteran actress and dancer Trina Parks is here to salute her James Bond co-star, Sir Sean Connery, and their classic movie, Diamonds Are Forever. We'll also be playing music from the iconic film, featuring Dame Shirley Bassey and much more. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Nominees were announced this week for the 2020 Soul Train Awards. Singer-songwriter Her leads with 8 nominations, including Best R&B Soul Female Artist, Best Collaboration, and Video of the Year. Other nominees include Chris Brown, Beyoncé, Chloe and Haley, and Usher. Sister friends Tisha Campbell and Tashina Arnold will serve as the evening's host for the 3rd year in a row. Watch the 2020 Soul Train Awards on Sunday, November 29th at 8 p.m. on BET. On television this weekend is Netflix's new holiday musical Jingle Jangle, a Christmas journey set in the glorious, vibrant town of Cobbleton. The film follows legendary toy maker Jeronicus Jango, whose fanciful inventions burst with whimsy and wonder. But when his trusted apprentice steals his most prized creation, it's up to his equally bright granddaughter and a long-forgotten invention to heal old wounds and reawaken the magic within. Jingle Jangle stars Forrest Whitaker, Felicia Rashad, Anika Noni Rose, Keegan-Michael Key, and newcomer Madeline Mills. Tune in to Upfront next week for an exclusive with the film's creator, David E. Talbert. That's this week's Entertainment Buzz. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes with Morehouse Healthcare. Starting in November, the Morehouse Healthcare Comprehensive Family Healthcare Center is moving from East Point to 455 Lee Street, right off I-20 and just blocks from the West End MARTA station. The center offers primary care from family doctors plus healthcare specialties such as radiology, cardiology, and OBGYN services. More information is available at 404-752-1000 or online at morehousehealthcare.com.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
Atlanta's Friday Jazz at the High Museum returns after an 8-month hiatus on November 20th. The 3-hour event features live music from pianist John Beal, as well as a duo and trio scattered throughout the venue. One of the art exhibitions that attendees will get to see up close is that of artist and activist Julie Maritou. The work of the Ethiopian-born, Michigan-raised painter is on full display now through January 31st and includes her famous abstract pieces and larger-than-life murals. High Museum of Art curator Michael Rooks takes us into Julie's world for this first segment of the show.
Yeah, it's we're really very fortunate to have the exhibition. There's 4 venues. LACMA and the Whitney Museum co-organized the exhibition, and there's 2 other venues. We're one of them, as well as the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis. So I remember speaking with the curator, one of the curators, Christine Kim, in Los Angeles about 5 years ago when she started organizing the exhibition. And we own a spectacular painting, Mogama. It's one of the 4 paintings in a cycle titled Mogama. And she asked if we would lend it. And I said, absolutely, if we can have the show. But it wasn't as simple as that, because for Julie Maritou, the selection of venues was very specific and intentional. When she emigrated to the United States from Ethiopia with her family at the age of 7, they first came to the Southeast. They moved to Alabama, but for a short time. And then they relocated to Michigan. So for Julie, being very intentional about where the exhibition is shown, she selected venues in the Southeast, the High Museum, and in the Midwest, the Walker Art Center, because these are places that were important in her life and in her becoming.
Now, before we get into Mogama, because we're going to talk about that, because that's really, really a special piece of artwork for her. Let's talk about Julie's style, because it kind of ranges from, wow, abstract paintings to billboard size, you know, of graffiti. Let's talk about her style, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. She developed this style, her mature style, in the 90s, the late 90s, beginning in around 96, 95, with mapping of her aspects of her identity, of who she is as a person, being a mixed race immigrant in the US who identifies as queer. She was taking apart these different aspects of who she is and gridding them basically, creating these different axes of that were pertaining to who she is in the world and creating these abstract kind maps, if you will, and graphs and grids. And that from that, she evolved a language, a graphic language, but also a language of mark making that ultimately was translated into these epic, so from small, literally 4x4 inch drawings to these epic scale paintings that combine mapping, cartography, ideas about geological digs and unearthing, excavating, lost civilizations. So they grew, her style grew from this exploration of herself to a consideration of history, world history, and the impact of history on who we are to become, really. Most people know her work in relation to her style in terms of these epic scale paintings that incorporate architectural drawing, along with geometric marks and shapes that are colorful, that are abstract. And the layering of all this information becomes this incredibly chaotic and vital composition that early in her career recalls the work of abstract painters in the early 20th century, like Kandinsky or Malevich. So as we get to the end of her career, abstraction really becomes the predominant language without these details of architecture and cityscapes and maps.
Let's go back to Mogama. You mentioned that earlier in the conversation. That's actually a painting in four parts, and it has something to do with a painting on four different continents. Am I correct?
So Mogama is a painting that was inspired by the Arab Spring, actually inspired by the Egyptian Revolution, which began on Tahrir Square in Cairo. And the title of the paintings, Mogama, is the name of the government building on Tahrir Square. So Julie was interested in sites around the world, historical sites and also contemporary sites of revolution and social change. And so in the paintings, the paintings feature all of these different sites that she chose, as she says, democratically around the world that have been sites of social change and revolution, from Tahrir Square to Mesco Square in Addis Ababa to Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan, where Occupy Wall Street happened.
Michael Rooks, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. We're talking about the Julie Maritou exhibition that is taking place now through January 31st at the High Museum of Art. Thank you so much.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Bremen Museum, presenting a jazz memoir, Photography by Herb Snitzer, available now through December the 31st. The virtual exhibition features portraits of jazz musicians from 1957 to 1964, including Louis Armstrong, Nina Simone, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, and Duke Ellington. Information about the virtual exhibition and other related activities are available at thebremen.org. That's thebremen.org.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
You just heard the voice of Dame Shirley Bassey performing the theme song to the classic James Bond film, Diamonds Are Forever. The star of that movie and the one who originated the role of the dashing 007, Sir Sean Connery, passed away recently at the age of 90. Someone who shared the screen with him in the 1971 film is veteran actress, singer, and dancer Trina Parks. She is credited as the first black Bond girl and black female villain in the franchise's history and shares that sisterhood with actresses Gloria Hendry, Grace Jones, Halle Berry, and Naomi Harris. I caught up with her recently to chat about how she secured the role of a lifetime.
I had actually gone to L.A. from New York to do the movie Great White Hope with James Earl Jones. And Donald McHale, the choreographer, I'd worked with him in his companies back in 66 to 67. And we toured all over. And James Earl Jones was also with us, because sometimes we did the play Emperor Jones. And so Donnie had asked me if I'd like to come and do the movie. So that brought me to LA from New York. And I decided that I like the weather much better. It's one thing. And I decided to stay. And I was introduced to a manager that a friend of mine, one of my dancer friends, had, because I was getting my singing act together. So fast forward, she set up for me to do a show at this club called the Ye Little Club in Beverly Hills. And she invited APA, Agency for the Performing Arts, William Morris, Cunningham, all the big agents. And again, fast forward, I signed with APA, and they called me about this movie that they were, presented by the franchise, the James Bond franchise, that they were interested in seeing me for this role. I didn't know who Sean Connery was. I'd never seen a James Bond film, so I didn't know anything about it. when my agent Marty Klein said that Sean Connery would be starring as James Bond, I remember saying, oh yeah, I didn't know who he was talking about. But I had I knew it was a big, very important thing, because APA was a very big, very well known agency, still is. And he said, but you'll need to they want someone that danced, and they knew I, was a strong dancer. But also had karate training, because they wanted that feel, because the character would be a bodyguard and would have to fight. So I said, yeah, I know karate from, being in the Dunham Company. When I was taking classes with Miss Dunham, Catherine Dunham, she taught karate. So that's how I actually got to, come up to be up for the role. And I went in, I was asked some time ago, did they actually say that they specifically wanted a black woman? And that was not said to me at all, and ever, I guess they did. I mean, they saw my, at that time, you sent out pictures and all that too. So it was no cell phones or computers or anything like that. So the other thing is that I couldn't even look up, Sean Connery or James Bond to even see anything before I even went for the interview. I just knew it was a big film that I was being cast for, and very well-known actor. And I had worked with on Broadway, several times, and doing concerts with well-known actors. So working with a well-known, big name actor wasn't a big thing for me. But I had gone to three calls. The first one was just, interviewing me, and I was speaking about my life and, who I danced with and performed with and all that. And then they called me back for the screen test, and we did a couple of, scenes. And not with Sir Sean, no. And he wasn't Surrey then yet. But And then the last time they wanted me to do movements. So I just did, I knew the character. So I just did everything. I kicked and turned and flipped and everything that I thought that the karate movements, everything I could think of, you know. So then, you know, my agent called me and said that they would like you for the role.
I'm Bambi.
Good morning, Bambi.
And I'm Thumper. Is there something we can do for you?
I can think of several things offhand, but at the moment I'm looking for Willard White.
Oh, Willie. Why, he's right out there.
And that's all there is to it?
Not quite. First, we're going to have a ball.
I was sent the script. Actually, they personal, you know, they had sent it through someone, delivered it actually to me, and I read the script, and I liked it very much. I liked the character because she was strong. Had no idea I would be the first Black female, you know, and villain actually in the Bond film, because first of all, I never saw a Bond film. And so it was just a great part.
So what was it like when you, you know, you first met him, you guys first connected? What was that energy like?
It was fabulous. We were staying at the same hotel. I can't remember, but it was a big hotel in Palm Springs, California. That's where we shot the movie, at the Elrod House, and right off of Palm Canyon, all the way up in the hills. Sir Sean had sent me a note earlier, a message, I think it was like that day before, that we would like to meet me earlier for a little breakfast before they picked us up to go on the set. And I thought that was so nice of him, because we really were able to just talk, you know, without being on the set and having to maybe be called for this or that, you know. And that's so that, because that would have been the same, you know, the time that we could really kind of get to know each other. This funny thing you said that, yeah, I wanted to make sure I met the person that was going to, the female that was going to beat me up, you know. And I said, well, yeah, but I, you know, I'll be sort of gentle. Yeah, we had little, you know, things like that said between us and in that conversation, which was really very comfortable. You know, we were very comfortable on the set, and even some of the photos, because, you know, doing a lot of autographs signings, I've been given photos and from the James Bond organization and from the photographer that took pictures of us. And some of the pictures I don't even remember taken, but he was there every day taking, you know, pictures, just when we were rehearsing the scene or when we were just sitting around waiting for the scene change. And you know, some of the pictures you could really see how we just, you know, we're just friends. And it was, yeah, he was fun to work with.
Support for WCOK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting an exhibition of work by artist Julie Maritu, now through January 31st. The exhibition is the first survey of Maritu's paintings, drawings, and prints. Tickets are required and available at high.org.
Hi, this is Melissa Ingram, General Manager of Aspire TV, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard JJ Strutt from Billboard charting smooth jazz diva Reagan Whiteside. She's taking her career to higher heights as the host of WCLK's new radio program, Saturday with Reagan Whiteside, and airs immediately following Upfront. I caught up with her this week to chat about the show and her new album.
Reagan Whiteside, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm so excited because your show immediately follows my show every Saturday morning. We're talking about Saturday with Reagan Whiteside. It's the newest show here at WCLK. And when I was thinking about, you know, my guests and who am I going to feature this week, I was like, you know what? I have not talked to my neighbor, the person next to me, and that's you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I am so honored.
And we're really excited to have you as part of our WCLK family because you've actually come through the station several times talking about your music projects, your concerts, but now you're officially a part of the family. So how did that collaboration come about? Because we're really excited to have you.
Wow. You know what? It was one of those blessings that just kind of just came. It was a surprise. Let's put it that way. One day, David Linton, the program director, called me up and said, "Hey, what do you think about being on the radio?" I said, "I love being on the radio." He says, "No, as a radio personality." I was like, "Wow, I'd never actually thought about doing it. I had never done it before." And I was like, "Well, yeah, you know, sure, absolutely." And so he says, "Okay, now you haven't done it before. You're gonna have to audition." I said, "Well, okay." So he sent me a script. And we have a studio here in the house. And so I read it down and sent it back. And he loved it. And I was like, "Wow, okay." He says, "Yeah." So, you know, back and forth trying to get the vibe of the show and, you know, all the little details. And that took about, I don't know, a month or two. And then next thing I know, I'm on the air. And it was really just really exciting. It's like a whole, it's like a breath of fresh air. And, you know, for me, doing something different, you know, so, and I'm learning a lot. It's really interesting learning about radio from the other side. I feel like I'm seeing behind the curtain now. So, and I can't believe how much I'm learning. It's really, I'm even like considering doing my music slightly differently, you know, if I know that we're planning on pushing that single to radio, I'm going to do certain things now, like, you know, maybe make the intro a little shorter or whatever. It's a thing. I had no idea, but yeah.
And speaking of radio, your single, JJ Strut, we've been playing that. We love it. It's such a song that when you hear it, you immediately it lightens your day. What was the inspiration behind that single as well? Because that's coming from the new album that's coming out this week. But let's talk about the inspiration behind that.
Yeah, JJ Strut was written for our daughter, JJ. She's 2 years old, and she's a little spitfire. You know, she's just, I call her my cute little hot mess. And and she never walks anywhere. She struts. I mean, she's only 2 years old. She's like two going on 30. So, you know, JJ Strut, that was so apropos for her. And, of course, my first number one was with Corey's Bop. Now, Corey is my son. He's four. So, you know, we had to have a song for her, too. So, you know, we got to keep things even around the house. Everybody gets two toys. Everybody's got to get two songs. So.
Let's get into this album, which you have been working on so feverishly throughout this pandemic. And this was actually supposed to come out last year, correct?
Correct. Yes.
And then, of course, the pandemic. So how have you been able to just remain creative and get to this point that you're going to release it this week?
Wow. You know what? It's a test of faith and just drive at this point. Because with the pandemic, you know, you're home with the kids, they're homeschooling and all of that, and it's been a huge adjustment, and you can't really do much. When they were babies, it was a lot easier, but now that they're up and running around and asking for juice and all kinds of stuff, you know, you can't really do anything while they're awake. And so they go to sleep and the second job begins. And then at some point you have to get some sleep. So it's been a challenge, but I have a lot of drive with this because it's one of those things where it's like, okay, enough already. Can we please get it out? Please, please, please get it out. So I can't not have something out. I just feel like I'm not doing enough if I don't have something going at least every year. So it's all about drive and determination and, you know, just, I guess, pigheadedness on my part.
As we move into 2021, because we're about 2 months out, which is crazy because the year actually has gone by really, really fast. What is your hope for this next year? The virus numbers are steadily increasing. There was hope and has been hope through a lot of the, the drive-in concerts. But as a performing artist, because you love to perform, we've seen you perform, you've done stuff here with CLK before coming on the air. But what is your hope as a performer for 2021 and being able to get out there and do shows, live shows?
That's a really tough one. I mean, I know I'm just like everybody else where it's like you definitely want to perform, but you want to make sure that everybody stays safe at the same time. Most instrumentalists cannot play through a mask. And so that's one kind of dangerous thing, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then, you know, especially with the smooth jazz audience, it's a community. You know, when you go to these festivals and these clubs and everything, it's pretty much the same audience. And so, you know, it's like a family reunion. There's a lot of hugs. There's a lot of, you know, revelry. And, you know, it's just everybody. There's a lot of very close togetherness. And so I wouldn't want people to get sick. But at the same time, you know, you kind of want to maintain that vibe. You know, it's a really big community. So, I mean, one good thing about this whole thing is that social media has really kind of helped keep everybody together. Artists are doing a lot of these Facebook Live shows and, you know, other platforms as well. And things that really weren't happening before the pandemic. So I think that it has helped in actually broadening an artist's reach, you know, and getting just growing your audience. And, you know, there's a lot of people who have discovered these artists that, you know, they never would have done that otherwise. So I guess next year is probably going to be more of that and hopefully more innovation with, you know, the whole social media and virtual concerts and everything. You know, when there's a will, there's a way. We're going to get it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you so very much, Reagan, for being our guest today. And again, we're celebrating you. You're my next door neighbor after this show is going to be your show. And so let's talk about, if we will, the album. It's coming out. Give us the name of the album.
Five Up Top.
And where can they get the album?
All digital outlets. And in a few weeks, it'll be physical. So I guess Amazon. Is that the last hurrah we have? Physical, but all the digital outlets, streaming as well, and on my website, and also Bandcamp. The cool thing about Bandcamp, you will actually be able to download full WAV files, you know, so that you can get that full real audio experience and not just a little smashed up MP3. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Michael Rooks, Trina Parks, and Reagan Whiteside. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and our voice of entertainment buzz, Ms. Reva Blue. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, everyone.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station. A tasting and ring on your